Get in, get out, and get to work.
Listen to UNLV Sports right here on ESPN Las Vegas, 1100 AM and 100.9 FM, KWWN, Las Vegas. Live from NBA Summer League, it's Cofield and Company.
History final, bang!
On ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Yep, Reno's in Vegas, Cofield and Company. I can't guarantee we've been here every year. Or I could just scratch that from the record and say it's our 20th year here at the NBA Summer League.
No one covers the Summer League like Cofield and Company.
I would say 18 out of 20 years. Something like that. John Von Tobel is the bellowing voice you hear there from VSiN and part of the company for life. May not want to be, but he's here. NBA expert. It's Cofield. Griffin is back in our Finley Toyota studios. We are by the NBA experiences. Did you walk in there?
No. I wasn't sure what my wristband got me, so I didn't want to get kicked out before
Just go in.
That's a good point. I just got to pretend like I belong.
After the show. That's all you have to do, really. You can walk anywhere you want in this world.
I mean, especially here at the Thomas.
Whoa. Game's going on right now. Got 4+ games on the way. UNLVtickets.com is your way to get in. $45 for adults. Like I said, 8 games a day, $35 for kids. So check it out. If you've never been down here, it really is. As soon as I walked in, the dude, Ryan, who was helping us out with credentials and escorting us, I turned the corner and I was like, here we go. I forgot all about it. National Tall Person Convention.
Yep.
Turn the corner. There's a guy who's 6'10". There's a lady over here, 6'3". I'm like, all right, shrimpy. Average height here, 6'4". You are small.
Yeah, I'm 6'1". I feel tiny walking around the concourse every time.
Well, think about it in the basketball world. 6'1 is small.
Yeah. Well, that's why I always used to get Isabel with that when we first started dating. My dad is like 6'4". And so I would always tell her, because he's giant and Isabel is tiny, like, you know, he'd be the smallest guy on the basketball court.
Wow.
Height-wise.
Yeah.
She's like,
oh my God. Terrifying your wife. Just factual information,
sure.
Hon. Just factual. All right, Big Four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
Can you believe what's gone on in the MountWest Conference for football with these head coaches?
It's not so close to the season, too.
In the last 3 weeks, we already had all these firings and people leaving the MountWest Conference. So you got all these first-time head coaches at places like Nevada. Technically, I count Spencer Danielson as a first-year head coach. He was the interim. By the way, that guy's impressive.
Yeah, I got to talk to him.
I liked him a little more than Andy Avalos.
Yes. I got to talk to him. He was great. He was very peppy, talkative.
He's beyond. This is going to sound like a cheeseball thing. He's beyond his years.
Sure.
Like he command. There's a certain command that he has at 35 years old where you're like, all right. And.
One of the many jacked coaches in the
conference. He's pretty yoked.
Yeah.
And I don't understand. Listen, you don't have to go like Conor McGregor to show off your physique. I don't know if you saw that picture, but enough. Okay, please.
Squeezing into an extra
yeah,
small.
Yeah, it's like, stop. Now with Danielson's, he's yoked up.
He was wearing like a 2X polo.
I know, he was swimming.
When I met him.
I think he probably forgot his shirt or something.
Sure.
But he was a Royal like and Ots like.
Dude, I mean, I don't want to distract from this actual topic. Sean Lewis,
that was crazy.
He's huge.
Yeah.
I didn't get to meet him, but in that coach's picture, I was like, holy smokes,
6'7".
Yeah, and he's jacked too.
That said, another first year head coach. Can he coach? Well, he did once as a head coach. He was pretty good. Colorado, it didn't work out. I think I know why it didn't work out. Yeah, San Diego State's one of the programs I walked away from Media Days, and I'm like, I mean, they have a tradition. I think they can be good again, but it might take a little while. Fresno was one of the givens. And right now, they're not. Jeff Tedford yesterday announced health issues again, and he's handing over the job. He's handing over the program.
He's done, right?
I think it's official. No one will write it in plain language. It doesn't say that he's on a leave, unless
right.
I missed it, but that was a clarification. The clarification I got today yesterday in the Fresno Bee. He said, sad emotions following my recent medical checkup. It's clear that due to health concerns, my family and I have made the decision to step aside as Fresno State's head coach and allow someone else to lead the football program. Yeah, I think he's done, which I think is massive. The Utah State deal is massive. Blake Anderson was an experienced coach. He was out like 2 weeks ago. We talked to Nate Dreiling, and I mean, he was joking, but as he was doing it, I'm like, okay. He was joking. He's like, well, you guys know Logan better than I do. What? Basically, like, he'd never been there.
He was on the staff,
but he was barely there.
Sure.
And he was one of the new hires, so they're like, okay, we got to go a little bit fresh here. So let's try this guy. He's going to be the DC. He's from New Mexico State. He's the head coach.
And I think the thing that sucks is twofold for Fresno State. First off, Tedford was just a good head coach. He always had his teams ready. You talk about guys who always made the most out of whatever roster they had. I think Tedford was one of those. And this roster looked like it was going to be pretty good. Mikey Keene is, I think, the best quarterback in the Mountain West and could have been better another year under Tedford. They have a lot coming back in skill positions and on defense and a schedule that's really manageable. They're the second choice to win the conference by the odds. Sucks.
Now, with a head coaching change like Utah State, we talked to that Nate Dreiling about this. He's like, yeah, this week there's a 30-day window. Players can transfer. That'll be pushed back a little further for Fresno. Fresno B writes, Bulldog players have a 30-day window to enter the NCAA transfer portal. I thought this was interesting, but player movement is unlikely at this point with fall camps opening soon. I don't know how to react to the word unlikely. If that's to soothe people in Fresno, that doesn't mean they're not losing anyone. And listen, it's a dirty game. Both programs have really experienced quarterbacks. I mean, it's kind of the height of scumbaggery.
Oh, I'd do it.
Maybe not in the Blake Anderson case, but in the case of Tedford, you lose your coach because of health concerns, and are you firing in with a $500,000 offer? Jay Norvell said during media days that his quarterback, Braden Fowler Nicolosi, was offered like $600K by a K-State person. His receiver was offered by Ole Miss and I think SMU. By the way, what did you think of that?
I didn't believe the figure. I think Braden Fowler Nicolosi is a flawed quarterback that I think quarterbacks nowadays obviously will get some attention. I don't know about the amount of money. For a program that has...
They also have a really good prospect quarterback.
Yes, and Avery Johnson. Yes. Like, I don't think you're going to be going there. But I'm telling you right now, I don't care who I am. If I have a quarterback situation where I'm just like, okay, we'll see what we got. I'm calling Mikey Keene immediately. You're trying to get him.
Can you think of any programs?
Yeah, I can. Why not UNLV? I know you think
that would be dirty doggish,
right?
In the same conference. I was thinking out of some a school at a higher level of expectations, which I don't think people have them doing really well.
I know you probably think Rutgers.
No, they're all set. No, that's not. They're transfer quarter. Why wouldn't USC try to throw like $400,000? They have Maiava.
They got Jay Maiava. They're fine.
He's not the starter.
I know that, but they're fine.
Are they?
No, I agree with you. I know what you're saying.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think
that would be an upgrade over both guys they have.
And my note about UNLV, it's not so much a shot at, Matt Sluka or Haj Malik Williams or Cam Friel, who is still here too. It's just like, it's two birds with one stone. You get to steal the best conference in the quarterback in the conference, take him from a rival and add him to you. The team that is directly ahead of you by some projections to win this thing, you could cut him down at the knees and go and get their guy and improve your quarterback room.
I want to work on this. We got to think of some other highfalutin programs with money where their quarterback situation, it's Miller, Moss, and Maiava. Okay. But there's got to be some others where they look at Mikey Keene. He's a good quarterback, man.
Well, I got a good one.
What do you think?
Ohio State.
I don't think so.
Will Howard's not that great. And I know you got saying.
I know.
And then you got your stupid quarterback, Derek Brown, or whatever his name is, that wears a number 33.
You would think when you pay that much money in that and you win that kind of race. Can you imagine Will Howard's like, I had all these schools I could go to, and now you're recruiting, over me, or at least to bring in a co-competitor?
I was going to say, not even that. Can you imagine the headlines in the nation? It's like, Ohio State, number like top three program in the country, brings in Fresno State starter Mikey Keene to compete for the job. Ooh.
I don't want to blow out the entire Big Four. We'll continue it on the other side. We're not breaking yet. But betting-wise, by the way, we're going to have our hardcore betting insider, Sam Paniatovich, up at the end of the hour. Fresno is 8. For wins. Does this change things for you?
I think a little bit, because I know a guy like Tedford adds wins at the market. and it might not be something you can quantify directly into a win total, but he does increase their probability of winning those coin flip spots.
Do you like that, the way you just put that? You said it, so you must like it. Adds wins at the margins.
Yeah.
I think that really means something.
Yeah, it does.
I'm telling you that the covering the Mountain West Conference and then also covering the rivalry with UNLV, I swear to God, why am I swearing to God? There's been so many cases in UNLV Fresno games that came down to the wire, and guess who won? Fresno.
Yep.
Over and over and over. Last year was a perfect example. They got two fourth down stops, two big interceptions. Yep. They made a tackle at the 4-yard line to stop a touchdown.
And then you get a drop pass.
They got a little break with Seneca McKee.
But those are the things that work for you. It's the football version of San Diego State in basketball.
Well, San Diego State was another program.
Yep.
A few years ago, they went like 10-2. In one-score games, they were like 8-1.
But I do think maybe in the big picture does. I also just think that Fresno State's schedule is very manageable this year. When you look at who they play on the road in conference.
You have it in front of you?
Yeah. So you go to at New Mexico, at UNLV before your bye. You're on the road against Nevada. You're at Air Force. Your home games are Hawaii, San Jose State, and Colorado State. And we'll see. Colorado State could be pretty good. We'll see what that is. And I think Hawaii's actually going to be pretty decent, but I think they're going to be more dangerous at home. Regardless, it's a schedule that you could take advantage of, especially if you're a well-coached team that takes care of business and retains everybody.
Intriguing. Number three.
Number three.
Alabama this year. You know, John, they always win. Kalen DeBoer is in there. Of course they're going to win. Let's listen to Heather Dinich, ESPN college football expert, talking at SEC Media Day about DeBoer and the expectations at Bama.
I don't think they're going to win the SEC. That's up to Georgia and Texas, in my opinion. But they should be one of the 12 teams. Kalen DeBoer is 104-12 in his past three jobs. He wins wherever he goes. And now at Alabama, he has more money, more resources, more talent than he's ever had before.
I'm not saying Kalen DeBoer is going to flop. You are following Nick Saban. I really don't care where else he's won. Seriously. Now, should their expectations be? The CFP, of course. The field is now 11. You know, with the at-large going to a group of five. Are you 100% in on Alabama being in the college football playoff? Because if you are, the number's very easy.
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No. This was one of my first things. If we watched the transfers, they were like, yeah, we're late. See ya. Multiple reports coming out of Tuscaloosa were like, you know, we better fix this NIL thing because we just really banked on, hey, we're Alabama and Saban to come play. You'll go to the NFL. And now all of a sudden, oh, wait, they don't want to come to Tuscaloosa?
It's not automatic.
We're not a destination. When did that happen? They had to rework their NIL in the offseason to make it more attractive to players. And we talk about adding wins at the margins. That psychopath in Nick Saban was a guy who added wins at the margins better than anybody. So now you look around at a conference in the SEC where you have the new Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. You've got improved programs coming in Texas and Oklahoma. You've got teams that I think can be very dangerous. Nico Iamaleava.
Nice.
For Tennessee is going to be a Heisman contender. That offense is going to be awesome. Texas A&M can be pretty good. LSU's got some pieces. Like, it's not some given that they just roll through to the second best team in the SEC.
On the spot. Head coach of San Jose State, Ken?
Niematalolo.
God! That's so good. Good for you. I lock up. I get nervous. I get nervous.
So did I.
I was freaking out to do a re-intro. We'll come
tonight.
Now, back to Cofield and Company. Live from NBA Summer League on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Here at Summer League, let's get into the league and what's happened so far. Of course, we will mention Bronny in a little bit, but there are high-level prospects here from the last three drafts. John Von Tobel's with us. He's from VSIN, Company for Life. We are on the concourse here at the Thomas and Mack, so look for us. We're around section 101. Nice set here, courtesy of the NBA. Looking at and this is not the way to judge how people are doing, but looking at the stat leaders through a couple of games, it is good and interesting to see hometown hero Julian Strother.
Mm-hmm.
He of Gonzaga. He has some history-making shots here in Vegas in the Sweet 16. He's come out of the gates averaging 28.5, 4.5 makes. What can he turn into? How important is the rest of the summer league? And is Michael going to trust him next year? Malone.
Yeah, got to call Michael. As Cassidy Hubbard learned in a very hard way during halftime.
Jonathan.
Yeah. I think it's a massive season because I think that if everything goes right for him, we're talking about somebody that's solidly inside of the rotation for Denver. They need him desperately. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is gone. He goes to Orlando. Then you have Christian Brown stepping up to play shooting guard for them. He's projected to be their starting shooting guard, Christian Brown. I don't know how good that will be, but right now he's their starter. Your backup two guard on paper and in pencil is Julian Strother. He has to be. This is part of what Denver has kind of constructed it to be, which is draft these guys, develop them, and then try to fill in the back end of your roster with them. They've tried to do it with Christian Brown. We'll see if that'll work this season. And behind him now, Julian Strother's got to step up, and I think he can legitimately be good. When you look at a guy who can shoot the way he can and has his size, listed at 6'6", 205, that's an NBA player. It's an NBA body. And I think the very least, as we well know in all these preseasons, everything, the only thing you want to do when you come out here is not suck, because that's the negative sign. But if you come out here and you dominate, at the very least, it's a positive sign that this game is moving slower to you because your time that you cut your teeth in regular season action. Strother looks really comfortable. I watched the game the other day against Toronto the entire way. Strother looks great. He looked like the best player on the floor.
What do you think the goals of the offseason were for the Nuggets?
Add a backup center. Seemed like that was it. They seem very much, and given their ownership
more
history.
More experience on the perimeter?
I mean, I don't think it's about experience. I think given their
ownership. Well, if the coach doesn't believe in the rookies or the second-year guys or third-year guys, then you got to get more experience.
I mean, you do, but at the same time, this is where the ownership comes into play. And your ownership has a track record. Not cheap is the right word, but trying to save money. And you didn't want to go into the second apron with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, so you had to let him go and walk, and he was going to get more money anyway, so he goes to Orlando. And all you do is go and add Dario Saric, and the rumor is that once Russell Westbrook becomes available, you're going to go add him on the cheap. That's what you're doing. And that is kind of a little bit of a problem. And while Michael Malone might want to have guys that he trusts, at some point you have to be able to develop and trust guys that are homegrown. They kind of trust Michael Porter Jr., and they gave him all that money. He's fine. He's a good player. Probably not worth the money he's making, but he's good. So now it's time to really see if you can go that route. Because you are a team, Steve. Look at the key pieces. You're a team that's built on guys who you drafted and developed. Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray. Now it's the time to develop and trust Christian Brown and a guy like Strother. And maybe even other guys like Jalen Pickett and the other young guys that you have on this roster. Because if you're going to be beholden to this whole second apron nonsense and not want to spend, then, and by the way, the second apron is more just spending. You get restrictions on draft picks, whatnot, all that kind of thing. Then you've got to be willing to develop and you got to be able to do it. So it sounds like they're going to try it.
Theron Holmes.
I really got to watch him much.
Well, he's out. Achilles.
Oh, that's right.
He went down.
Yes,
like a week ago.
Yep.
He was going to be a usable player. That's a crappy break.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into this offseason thinking something's going to change with the Nuggets. They're going to commit to the young guys or they're going to get some veterans. And to me, they're still one of the top teams in the NBA. I love their odds. I don't know what the latest update is, but I was seeing it at like 8 or 9 to 1 to win the title. Mm-hmm. Now my only hesitation is Jamal Murray ascending, or is he about what he is, or could there be an unwinding here? Because his lack of maturity at times is embarrassing.
Yeah, it wasn't a good showing in the postseason. He should have been suspended for throwing that heated pack on the floor. There's no question about it. And interestingly enough, to your point, this is about time where he's supposed to get an extension. He's playing for Team Canada. And they haven't given it to him yet, so that's going to be interesting to see how that develops for Murray, who I don't think there's any danger of him leaving. But they are, I would say, to stick up for them a little bit, they are clearly heading in the direction of drafting and developing and trying to use these young guys. Because we're talking about Julian Strother. Remember, Peyton Watson is on this team. He's a 2022 first-round pick, and he is their backup power forward. He's going to play a very big role for them. Looked pretty good last year. There are dudes here that are young that they're trying to push forward with the way that they're playing.
Other players of note this summer. I was of the belief that Zach Edey probably shouldn't be a top 10 pick, but he can be a guy who plays 20 minutes and gives you some different looks, especially on offense. I think he can be a little bit of a rim protector. I don't know what happens when you drag him far away from the basket. The returns so far are what?
I mean, after his first summer league game in Salt Lake City, he became the favorite to win Rookie of the Year.
I mean, that's stupid.
It is. It's really.
But I think he can play in the league.
Yes, and that's the thing. I think I will say flat out, I am wrong about Zach Edey, because I even made a statement one time about like he'll be lucky to be a second round pick, and maybe his draft status was elevated by the weakness, I'll say in air quotes, of this draft. But no, he's a serviceable NBA player. You don't teach that size. His touch around the rim is insane. He's the antithesis of a player who was just sitting on the bench actually right now for the Brooklyn Nets that we got to watch, David Mwoka, right? Strays, but still. I never saw anybody who had worse touch as a post player around the rim.
Yeah.
And Edey's got really good touch around the rim. And he's giant. He can board. Underrated part about watching him in the Salt Lake Summer League, he's a good screen setter. And for a guard that holds the ball the way that John Morant does, being a good screen setter is going to be really helpful in that regard. And he can roll. Maybe working on a three-point shot. We'll see. But no, he does have a role. I think he absolutely has a role in today's day and age. Now, is he going to be the best rookie? I find that hard to believe, considering he'll be like the third or fourth mouth to feed, and that's being generous. And he's not going to do a lot in terms of scoring. And I think minutes played, but he's the favorite.
Early returns on top 10 guys. Did the Rockets nail it with Reed Sheppard?
Have you seen him at all? He's awesome. He's incredible. He like gets guys on his hip. He knows what to do with them. He knows the way guys play on screens defensively. He knows if he's pulling up, if he's attacking. His passing is awesome. His defensive instincts. He had 5 steals the other day in a game. The dude is crazy good. And what makes it even more incredible is Calipari wouldn't play him. He was coming off of the bench, and all of their best lineup screened play Reed Sheppard, and he wouldn't do it. He looks like he's the best player in this draft.
Basically, a run out. Calipari wound up getting run out. I mean, you know, in the end, it's Arkansas is his choice, but he got run out because he didn't allow Reed Sheppard to just go out and average like 22 a game.
Yep. And watching him in this setting, I'm amazed that that's the – how can you – because there's no way you didn't see that in practice. There's no way you didn't see that in practice. And how good he is in every single facet of his game.
There's also no way you didn't know he was a one and done.
Yeah.
Go for broke. What are you developing? Oh, we got to keep his ego in check. No.
Everything screamed, this is probably your best player. And Cal ignored it. And I'm wildly impressed with him. I don't want to overreact. He's down to like 7-8-1, depending on where you look for rookie of the year. You talk about role, probably primary backup point guard potentially, but you still have Amen Thompson. You don't know what you're going to do with him too. So I think that there's not that much there for him on this roster this year. But if he plays like this, he's going to force the hand.
I'm going to give you 2 teams. Tell me if one of these rosters is going to go plus 10 in wins this year.
Like 10 more than they did last year?
Yep, okay. And I have the numbers in front of me. Rockets and Magic. First, the Rockets, because you mentioned Sheppard. I mean, they were only 22-60.
Rockets were a little bit better than
that. No, they were better. I just looked it up. I was like, what is this? No, they were up to 41?
Somewhere around that range. They're floating around 500.
41. Yep. 41. And Magic sitting at... That's a long delay, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
My screen's freezing up. Magic were way up there. So plus 10 for the Magic would be... They're one of the best teams in the East. They were 47 wins.
Yeah. That's the problem is asking...
Can the Magic break into a top 3 that has some teams that have super high expectations?
I would say no. I think Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is an awesome addition. He's exactly what they want. They're one of the best defensive teams last year. He's a good defender. They needed shooting. He's a great shooter. But I just don't know in terms of offensive creation.
What about development of their younger guys?
I mean, they are, but like... They're kind of developing them, but they're all like forward position type players. Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, who took a massive step back last year as a 3-point shooter, so he wasn't really great. it just seems like it's a clunky offense. And Jalen Suggs, he turned out to be a really good three-point shooter. He actually, I think he was a 40% three-point shooter last year. He really turned that around. He's a great defensive guard. But offensively, in terms of shot creation, you're still really relying on Paolo Banchero to carry the water there. And I think that's what ultimately holds you back. And like you said, an Eastern Conference that got a lot better. And by the way, the Bucks quietly got better too, with a lot of additions on the fringes when you're talking about Torian Prince and Gary Trent Jr.
Gary Trent today, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, plus 10's a lot for a 47-win team.
Yes.
Can they get to the 50 wins? And then plus 10 for the Rockets would be in the 50 wins.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Rockets, the wild card is they have so many assets and good ones that they could deal for somebody before the season begins.
Do you think they were really making a run at some of the big names that were kind of like the fourth, fifth choice on whatever, the Paul George? You know, some of the big names out there.
100%. They've been very clear that this has been their goal. That's why they went and got Fred VanVleet. That's why they went and got Dylan Brooks. It's why they tried to get Brook Lopez.
It's why they hired a coach with a little bit of a rep, good and bad.
Because he is going to get you to win now. The veterans are going to buy in.
Sammy P coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll get into Team USA against Australia, the men. That was not that encouraging.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from NBA Summer League on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Summer League on a Tuesday. We'll be here today and tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to hook up with the folks who are usually here. UNLV, Ron Rebels, Kevin Kruger will join us in the 3 o'clock hour. Talk about mostly pro basketball, a little bit of college, actually a lot of bit of college. Four tickets right now for the NBA Summer League. These tickets are good for any day now through the 22nd. League is today through the 22nd. UNLVtickets.com. Games going on Thomas and Mack and Cox Pavilion. Caller 7, caller 7, caller 7. 364-1100, 364-1100. I promise. Oh, and it's going to be explosive. We do have to address LeBron as a dad and Bronny because I there's some issues here. I don't like what I'm saying. But if you missed the earlier part of the show, now that Reno's in, I'm glad you guys are here. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Got to dial 775 in the north. We were talking about the anthem at the Home Run Derby and how dreadful it was, and you brought up the question, do we have to play the anthem before every single event we do in sports? Is it necessary?
No, not at all.
Do we have to play it, especially in leagues like the WNBA, where teams aren't on the floor for the anthem?
What? They're not?
No notices because it's not publicized like it was, and there's not a one figure to rally against the hate like Colin Kaepernick. But, yeah, teams will be in the back during the national anthem. They're not on the floor.
That's unacceptable.
So what happens in the Olympics? Now, I don't know if they play both teams' anthems before the game. Obviously, we know that happens during medals, but If you do it at home, at your home games, or you do it on the road, if you do it in the WNBA, why wouldn't you do it at the Olympics?
I mean, at the Olympics, it makes the most sense because these are games based on country. Now, but the problem is there are so many events you run out of singers, don't you?
No, they don't sing it. They would just play the music.
Yeah, oh, okay.
You just play a band.
Like,
yeah.
How many singers would you need for every single event that's happening?
Can you imagine getting called up? Right? You're called up and you're multilingual and they're like, hey, you got to do the anthems. I'm like, wow, this is going to be good money. How many do I have to do today? Like 78?
Yeah. They're going to have to call that chick out of rehab. Don't go yet.
You can't take time off, hon.
Yeah, we need you in France. Just don't be drunk when you sing it.
What would you do at the Olympics if you're consistently a person? And again, I don't care what you do.
I mean, I think.
And you know what? I don't want any of you to care what I do. It's none of your business.
No, it's none of your business. Go do it. Do what you always do. Stand on business. I mean, to be quite honest, I don't know what the Olympics are like from a rating standpoint, but I don't think many people are going to notice if people are really locked in. I think the one that you might get is Olympic basketball viewers. Because that would be, I think, on the surface, the most popular sport from a viewing perspective. But do what you do. Do what you always do. And as long as you're consistent and can point to that, I don't think there would be a problem.
Do you think there are people who are mad when they hear us question, why do the anthem before every game?
Yes.
Why?
I have no idea.
Why do we have to?
Right.
You do what you want. If you want to stand up, you can sing in your head.
There's nothing.
Because what is annoying over the years has become very much performative, and it's people who are looking around, seeing how others are behaving, and then I do that because I see the same people who will pass judgment on others at a baseball game, at a restaurant when it's on TV. I stand, but I do it as a troll because I'm watching everyone else sit down. I'm like, let's go, get up. But what I'm doing is what they do. Like, what's the point?
But it's also the...
We've weaponized something that's supposed to be cool. You do what you want.
Well, it's been weaponized inconsistently because the other part is within an event itself. Like, right now, if they're going to sing the national anthem before the Summer League game, there's one underway, but you know what I'm saying. The same person that will criticize somebody for not doing what they're supposed to do will also not get out of line for their nachos while it's playing.
Okay.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I just wonder... If you're, you know, you're in the WNBA, you got four players here from the Aces, you know, Plum Gray, Asia Wilson, and Jackie Young. Are they going to be consistent? That said, we got to do some research to see if they play it before the game. I don't really care. Do what you want.
Live from NBA Summer League. Sports gambling insider Sammy P joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Looking out the Strip Pavilion here at Thomas & Mack. Nice view, right? Mandalay, Delano, Pyramid, called Luxor in Vegas.
The lava pit that is known as the Thomas & Mack parking lot.
It is unreal, isn't it? It is the hottest place on earth. I don't know what happens here. Sam Paniadovich is with us, our gambling expert. Sammy!
I'm waiting for Bronny James to make his first three-pointer. When will that happen? Do we have odds on that yet?
At this point, I'd like him to hit the rim. It's gotten bad. It's gotten real bad.
Oh, 0 for 15, his first three-point, three-point attempts. Not good.
Yeah. We saw Jaylen Brown. I guess people were doing some lip reading, basically saying he's not an NBA player. And then overnight, Jaylen Brown tweeted out something kind of complimentary of Bronny, so we're thinking that maybe LeBron made the call. Like, bro, relax on
Bronny. Well, that happens. That's how it goes.
Yes. Well, today's kind of interesting. I saw this note. I don't know if I realized. You know, we talk about the NFL and sports betting as a recent development, a partnership of recent times. This is actually the 77th anniversary of the NFL first putting out injury reports, and Bert Bell, the commissioner at the time, actually said, listen, this is another weapon we're using to thwart gamblers. It 100% was put out. He says to thwart gamblers. I actually think it was to inform people as well. But it's pretty interesting how far this goes back and how long gambling has been part of the fabric of U.S. sports.
Oh, yeah, and it goes back to the 80s, too, when you had, you know, Uncle Brent, Jimmy the Greek talking about lines. And Jimmy would say something like, well, I think they're going to win by just under a touchdown or just by more than a field goal. I mean, it's been around forever, and I'm with you. I don't think injury reports thwart gamblers. If anything, they help gamblers, especially when a guy goes from probable to questionable or the best for us. I mean, when a guy goes from probable Wednesday, Thursday to doubtful on Friday, it might as well be out. If he goes from probable midweek to doubtful Friday or Saturday, he's not playing. So injury reports, if you know how to read them, sort of like reading a betting screen, they can help the gambler that knows what to look for.
Sammy P is with us. Sam, go ahead.
I just wanted to say this quote in the article that you sent over is insane. Quote, because of their spies, the big gambling houses may know Sammy Baugh is hurt and probably won't be available. Slinging Sammy Baugh.
It was 1947 when they started putting it out. I know. So I mentioned sports betting, just a fabric, part of the fabric of the sports world. I think election betting should be allowed. It's not allowed right now here in the United States. It is allowed right across the border. Certainly, for sure, in Canada, where BetMGM in Ontario had some odds up, and they still have the odds up. Last week, and I was asking everyone on the show, and I forgot to ask you. I don't think we talked about this last week, but I was asking, should we take Trump is now over 200, so now he's minus like 210. Should we roll the dice here? Is there some value on Kamala Harris at like 6-7-1?
No, I think Trump's actually kind of cheap, to be honest with you, and it's crazy to say that because this is as expensive as he's been. I mean, going back to you know, the 2016 election. He was a dog against Hillary. Even when he got to the 2020 election against Biden, Trump was a very small favorite going into election day. So to see him at $2 or higher is expensive, but at the same time, I think it's cheap. I mean, if they don't replace that guy, Joe Biden, I mean, he doesn't even know where he's at half the time. I just, you know, and I don't want to get political on your program because that's not what we do. I mean, the fact that these are the two candidates is laughable at this point, but I wouldn't bet anybody on that Democratic ticket unless I got like a 10 or a 12 to 1 price. And I don't have the odds in front of me. And it's not to say I like this guy, but I'm curious on the number I could get on the California governor, Gavin Newsom. That would be a guy I think would maybe warrant a wager if I could get him 10, 12 to 1. I'm not betting Biden, no shot. Not betting Harris either because I don't think she can win. I think she's an idiot. So unless it's Newsom at a good price, it's a pass on the Dems for me.
You know, you mentioned something. A lot of people, I think, like to throw on the election odds as some sort of fact, but you kind of alluded to the last few years or last few election cycles. The betting market hasn't been accurate on these election odds. Do you think that it's accurate this time around? What would be different?
I don't know that they're necessarily more accurate this year. I think people are seeing the polls, and we're seeing, you know, reports out of all the swing states. Like, there are really seven states that are going to swing this election in 24. You know, Pennsylvania is one of them. Ohio is one of them. Georgia is one of them. Arizona is one of them. And Trump is technically at the polls now. And again, polls and odds are much different. But according to the polls, Trump is winning in all seven of those swing states. So I think people see that. People see the way that Trump dominated that debate. And let's not be silly here and ignore the fact that Trump, you know, somebody shot at Trump over the weekend. And, you know, he comes out of that looking stronger than he was. So I think all those factors just play into the Trump hype. I'm not going to lay $2 or $2.10 on Donald Trump, but I think those numbers are just sort of relative to the hype on Trump, all that's happened with Trump in the last month or so, and just the decline for Joe Biden, who just looks lost every time he speaks. And I, you know, again, I don't want to lay $2 on Trump, but minus 200 also isn't a big favorite. I remember when Trump got out to minus 800, JVT, the night of the 2020 election. Trump got out to minus 800 around midnight Eastern, and it looked like he was going to win again. And then you wake up, you know, 6, 7 in the morning East Coast, and Hillary's minus 2,000. So I think elections are unpredictable for the most part. Remember, the biggest one was Dewey over Truman. Truman was like 10-1 or 15-1, and Truman beats Dewey in 1945 or 46, whatever year it was. So we can't look at odds and think those are the end-all, be-all in terms of elections.
Sammy P., Fox Sports, up on Cofield and Company. Paul Skeens, big story tonight at the All-Star Game. Big story on the betting markets, because I know a lot of places have made adjustments, even going as far to just drop him off the board for Rookie of the Year. He certainly, we can talk about him being the Cy Young. What are we looking at? Anything on the odds market for Pirates rookie Paul Skeens?
Circa's got him down to 4-1, which is the lowest price, I believe, in this country. Some books have 5-1. There's a stale 6. Crazy, because he was 200-1 when he came into the league. And, you know, I never got a piece of that. I wish I did. I did bet a little 25-1 rookie of the year right away, just in case. You know, it was sort of like a break glass if you must, and I did. So I have a little piece of that. And obviously, if he stays healthy, he's going to win the rookie of the year. But if you look at Chris Sale's metrics this year, holy cow, he's been insane. If Sale keeps doing what he's doing, he's the Cy Young. But, you know, I had guys last week texting me because Skeens was throwing a no-hitter in Milwaukee. And at that time, he was 20 or 15-1 before the game started. And as the game gets through the fourth and fifth inning, I'm getting texts. Hey, should I bet Skeens 10-1, 8-1? And I'm like, no, you could have bet 200, 100, 50, 40, 30, all the way down. I could never tell somebody with good faith to bet Paul Skeens at 4-1 to win the Cy Young. That is an absolute pass at that number. But guess what? People are still going to bet it, and they're going to bet it until he shows some sign of humanity, because he's pitching like a robot right now, and it's a great story for baseball. And I promise you this, my editors at Fox would love for him to keep doing this, because Paul Skenes clicks. He gets views, he gets mentions, he gets clicks. People care about Paul Skenes, but there's no way I'm betting him 4-1 to win the Cy Young.
That start you mentioned against Milwaukee, before the game began, he was -360 over at one shop to win Rookie of the Year, 25-1 to win the Cy Young. After the start, he had reached -700 to win Rookie of the Year, and he was 11-1 to win the Cy Young. It was nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. But look, I mean, that's the power of these dominant pitchers. I remember Strasburg came up, I think, 2012, and he sort of was similar, but he wasn't having the success that Skenes has. And, you know, wins and losses tell the real story. And Paul Skenes, in terms of betting Paul Skenes to the strikeout number, he's made 11 starts this year. He's gone over the strikeout total 9 of 11 times. And people are going to eventually think that that's automatic, and, you know, the number is going to get to 8, 8.5, and then the books are going to get some of that back. But it's been very nice to the public. They've been betting him every start. They've been firing his strikeout over, and he's been making them a lot of money. And now they're kind of rolling that money over and betting him at bad prices to win Cy Young. Again, never going to happen for me. I'm not going to bet him sub 5-1 to win the Cy Young.
Sammy P. on Cofield & Company. We got about 2 minutes left. I know you wrote a story for Fox Sports about Dream Team odds versus 2024 Team USA. How'd that turn out?
It was the most clicked story last week, which is crazy to me because I think it's a dumb argument, but people care about it. The initial number that I got from Jeff Sherman at the Superbook was a pick'em. That was a 92 team against a 24 team. And then I texted John Murray, who also works at Superbook, and I think he's in the JBT camp where he's got the 2014 winning by 20 or 30 points. I you want to give me 10 points with the Dream Team, I would take it. But the final answer on Dream Team against 2014 Men's Basketball USA was Dream Teamers -2.5, -3, give or take.
Dream Team gets smoked like a blunt at a Willie Nelson concert.
Wow. I knew you were going to say that. I knew that was coming.
These guys are ageist. They're ageist. No respect for the legends.
But what if they can't shoot? It's one game, right? What happens if Jordan and Pippen put them in handcuffs and Karl Malone breaks Steph Curry's wrist? Then what's the final score?
I mean, you probably don't finish the game if he's assaulting him on the court. But you also have
basketball play. Basketball play.
Right. That's how basketball was played back then. I remember.
Yeah, I don't care how good the Dream Team was at getting the rim. I look at the way they defended the wings with Jordan and Pippen and inside with Robinson and Malone and Barkley. I just think defensively those guys would shut down a lot of the actions than the 2014 would do. But the best part about this argument, we will never, ever, ever know what will happen. And that's the best part.
Sammy is up with us. Sammy P. Paniatovich, FoxSports.com. All right, I have a couple extra seconds here. I saw last week you posted a picture of a Chicago dog. I assume that was in Chicago. Where was that?
Yeah, that was at Mr. Beef, the infamous spot that has been turned into the Bear. Yeah. Yep.
Wow, that's funny, man. You and another friend of mine, completely unrelated, was actually over there last week. I got to mention this, a little bit of breaking news on the hot dog eating contest with Kobayashi and Chestnut. There is a rule change for that event on September 2nd, and that is when they eat the hot dogs, they have to eat the buns. Dunking the bread is illegal. That is going to change the total, and I think it might change the line between the two of them. Eating the bun without dunking it is a whole new ballgame.
I don't know that. I think Kobayashi's lost his fastball, though. I haven't studied it too in-depth, but I'm worried that he's a little out of the game at this point.
Sam, it's September 2nd. What are you doing if you're not studying? I'm kidding. Sam, we appreciate it. Thank you for the time. We'll talk to you next week. And you're here soon, right, in a couple weeks?
I will be there, yeah, August 5th.
Bet Bash, Circa. All right, Sammy, we'll talk to you, buddy.
Yep.
There he is, Sam Paniatovich. Mr. Beef. You watching the Bear?
Oh, yeah, I haven't watched the new season yet, but yes, we are Bear fans.
Really?
Fans, yes.
I won't spoil it. I think the season's awesome. I've seen other people complain about it. Get out of here.